This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in, everybody. Third and final hour of Sharp Money. Hanging out on a Friday from downtown Las Vegas. Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. We have Joe Serallo with us from the great state of California. Wyatt Tomchek, our producer. And for the next half hour, he's made it over. He's brought a lot of patrons with him, clearly, as a Friday heats up here at Bar Canada. Mike Somich, co-host of The Handle. He's in town from Santa Barbara. Great to see you, man. You're back.
Yeah, love it. Happy to be back here in Las Vegas. It's been almost a month, which is just wild since it's been almost every single weekend. Starting to ramp up for football season, so be here for 3-4 weekends in August. Then it's going to be pretty much every weekend through January. So excited to get football going again. I love the dog days of summer because I like betting on baseball. But, man, every now and then you just sit there and you're like, all right, let's kick off the season here.
Seriously, Joe, one of my favorite pastimes from this last football season, I would usually do our live bet football show from right here, Bar Canada. So you make the walk back down Circa. Usually we'd hang out, have a drink, watch the end of the games. A lot of times I'd walk to Circa as Mike's show right after us was getting done with Matt Brown, and I would see Mike, Matt, Steph, the producer, having their, you know, their post-show cocktail. It was a great, you know, just a great bonding experience to run into those guys and be like, hey, how's the Sunday night betting going? And you just kind of go in. So, Joe, I can't wait for you to be a part of that this fall because it is a time to be alive here. Once you get, it's like football season, like the crowds here, it is unlike anything we will see, of course, at any point this summer.
Oh, I bet. I can't wait to be a part of it, man. You know, I just made my first trip to Circa in April. We'll be making my second trip on Sunday for all of next week, but haven't experienced a football Sunday in Circa yet, so I can't wait for the fall time to roll around.
Let's do it. I'm excited for it. We were talking AFC North today on the show, Mike. You heard the last little bit of our discussion, starting with Baltimore, the favorites, Bengals just slightly behind, both a couple 10.5 win teams, and then you have Cleveland and Pittsburgh each at 8.5 there, with Pittsburgh rounding out the divisional odds. Where do you stand, AFC North, on a division that is always so compelling from top to bottom with the talent that's in that league?
Yeah, it's extremely compelling, especially after last season where we saw everything with Burrow. He's not able to make it even to really the start of the season. So we get a shell of Burrow throughout that year. You get an interesting Bengals team because of it. And the love that they have gotten to me is a little above and beyond what I think they should be getting. So you assume that, oh, hey, he's going to say he likes the Ravens. The Ravens kind of ran pure last year. It felt like everything that could go right for Baltimore went right. They lost something on the defense there this year. So I'm not sure you're going to see the same Ravens team that you saw last year. And then I go down to the Cleveland Browns. And I completely understand the argument around Deshaun Watson. But if you take out the quarterback in this division, top to bottom, the Browns roster is significantly better than the rest of the division. I'll take the Browns wide receivers over everybody except the Bengals. I'll take the Browns defense over everybody. I think there's a ton of talent on this Browns team, and you don't need Deshaun Watson to be a top 10 quarterback for them to be able to compete inside this division. Right now they're sitting at plus 600. I've got a Browns future ticket on them to win the division. I also played them over their win total. To me, that it's just not a properly priced division. I think all this should be more like the AFC East, where you've got three teams that are sitting there that are all around that, you know, I think it's plus 160, plus 190, plus 200 type level. There should be a little more separation to the Browns, but I don't think that they should be 4X the price of the other two teams that are atop this division right now.
Yeah, that was the thing we were just laying out, Joe, as much as we are kind of down from an offensive perspective. You look at the positional rankings, though, fifth defensive line. These are PFF that just came out within the last couple of weeks. Eighth best linebacking room, sixth best defensive backfield. You think about that DB, you know, defensively, you're usually accustomed to seeing a team like that more priced in the double-digit range. We did mention it just briefly, Joe. We touched on our thoughts on the Browns, but you can give the rebuttal here if you would like on why Cleveland, you do like them to go under this year.
Yeah, Mike, I think it's interesting. First off, we agree on Cincinnati. I think that they're a little overhyped coming into this season. I just need to see more out of their offensive line. The defense took a tremendous step back. So I'm with you with that. I think where we disagree is, you know, I'm still incredibly high on Baltimore. And this Cleveland team, you know, you say that you'll put their receiving core up against anyone. I got to be honest, Amari Cooper, probably the best receiver when you take the Bengals out of the equation. Not probably. He is the best receiver between the Ravens, Browns, and Steelers. But after that, this receiving core is not that impressive to me. I think that the Ravens receiving core might actually be deeper than Cleveland's. And Nick Chubb is certainly a heart attack, but it's just a matter of his health. They might be too reliant on Chubb because you said take the quarterback out of the equation. For me, you can't take the quarterback out of the equation. And I don't trust Watson, and that might make them too reliant on Chubb. I also think losing Harrison Bryant might actually hurt them more. I don't think enough people are talking about Bryant. He was a great target last year for any of the five quarterbacks who they plug and played and had step in there. I think losing him is going to hurt this offense a lot.
Yeah, I could see the issues around Chubb especially. And I understand where you're coming from. Zay Flowers could take a nice step forward for Baltimore. I have issues where it's Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews. When they were both on the field, they couldn't figure it out with both of them in Baltimore to be effective down the field weapons. Andrews has been hurt the last couple years, so I don't trust that he's going to be around there. And I don't trust the receiving core that much outside of Zay Flowers in Baltimore. I agree with your points on Jerry Jeudy. He was wildly frustrating in Denver. He had games where he looked like he was one of the best receivers in the NFL. And he had games where it looked like he didn't want to even be out there, where he didn't even try. There were situations where he couldn't get a second foot down multiple times last year, where I think I could have probably gotten 2 feet down on catches. And it's things like that when you see it that are just insanely frustrating. But when you look at this Cleveland team and what we heard last year and the narrative around them with the five quarterbacks and all of that, no one talks about the offensive line injuries they had as well. This was a very banged up offensive line the second half of the season in Cleveland. When healthy, this is a top five offensive line as well. I think that will help them produce, and I expect Chubb to get better as the season goes along. I think he's not someone you can count on week one, but by week seven, week eight, I hope that you get the version of Nick Chubb that we saw two seasons ago. And Ford wasn't bad when the offensive line was healthy, and so the offensive line being healthy here early in the season is a key to me. Yeah,
Mike Somich with us here, co-host of The Handle, Saturdays and Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern time over at Circa. I just pulled this up just as the intermediary here. Just to compare, just from Sharp Football PFF, they have their position by position rankings. Sharp has Cleveland 13th, Baltimore 22nd, PFF Cleveland 18th, Baltimore 23rd. Again, that's not the be all end all. I'm just pointing out what a lot of respected people are saying on the wide receiver front. But I think very compelling cases to be made for both. As far as Pittsburgh, that's the one team we haven't gotten your thoughts on yet. Is this finally the year that the voodoo magic runs out for Mike Tomlin? If you're high on Cleveland in general,
I don't know what Pittsburgh does to be very good here. Another very good defense, right? So it's going to be one of those teams that has to rely on what they've relied on, really, the voodoo magic that we saw from Tomlin last year. It seemed like whenever they needed a red zone turnover, miraculously, the opposing quarterback just threw the ball right to him. And I can't count on that continuing to happen for Pittsburgh. And then you look at the schedule. The back half of this schedule is an absolute meat grinder. Like, it's going to be very difficult for them to go any better than 3-5 through their last eight games, I think, would be a success for this team. And so with that in mind, that means you have to start out very, very good. And even the early schedule, I don't think, is as gettable as you'd like. I mean, you do have teams like the Broncos. You've got the Chargers on that schedule, but I'm a little higher on the Colts than most. You still have the Cowboys and Falcons. We'll see what happens with the Jets there. It just feels like this is a Pittsburgh team that has to be, 6-3. They have to be 7-2 headed into the back half of the schedule if they want to compete. And if they are that, I will be ecstatic, because that means I get to bet someone else to win this division at a much better price, because Pittsburgh is not the team I want long term.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I think that the Steelers team, and tell me if you agree with this assessment. I think when you're dealing with the AFC North, you have to look at all these teams when you're looking at win total projections and say 3-3 against the division is just where I'm going to start there. Because I think if you start assuming one team's going to win five, one team's going to, like last year, what was Pittsburgh? 4-2. And they were not an impressive team, but 4-2 against their own division, 2-0 against the 13-4 Ravens. So that's where I start. And then I just look at, to me, coaching matters. And I know Tomlin's not out there on the field, but take that week one game, for instance, in Atlanta. That's a spot I like Pittsburgh. I think, even though they've got a new quarterback room, so do the Falcons. And the Steelers, to me, just have more continuity. I think Atlanta's a team that's going to take a while. To me, a lot of people are way too high on the Falcons. I think they're going to take a while to kind of mesh and gel together. I could see that being a spot where the Steelers as underdogs went outright week one. I do think that there's a way that they're going to squeak 9 out of here. And I also, like I said last segment, I love the value there, plus $1.35.
Yeah, the plus money on the over is what makes it interesting, right?
Sure.
And I have not bet over or under on the Steelers yet, and I'm probably not going to get to the window. To me, they're a team where I want to watch this in season. What I love to do is send myself calendar invites for a lot of these teams that pop up after a specific week that I want to look at betting them. And to me, the Steelers, after that Colts game, if they do beat the Falcons and they're 4-0 before playing the Cowboys, and they should beat the Raiders, and they've got the Giants before their bye as well. But that's when I'm going to look at an in-season under for them, because I do think it gets significantly harder post-bye for them, and I want to get involved when I get a better number than what it's currently sitting at. And so if they are able to pull off the week one upset, great. Go 4-0. Give me a chance to enter the market when I think I have an advantage because of how the schedule sets up.
That's a great little pro tip. You get the old, usually we're getting our dinner reservations. Instead, reminders. Instead, Mike's got reminders on checking in-season in-season markets, which is a very smart way to do it. Speaking of some of these markets, though, Mike, you are interested in, there's at least one, all the different options are so tremendous for us to parse through, especially a longtime bettor like yourself. What was the one market that you found yourself salivating over the most when you looked at these season-long props?
I love the rushing leaders market this year. I think it's super interesting because you've got McCaffrey at plus 275. I don't disagree he should be the favorite, but he shouldn't be that short in a market, especially when you have all of the talk in San Francisco about them trying to throw the football a little more, keep McCaffrey fresh for the long run in the season. He's also going to be a target out of the backfield, so that takes away from some of his rushing yards in certain situations. And then it's an offensive line that has no depth. If there is one or two injuries on that San Francisco offensive line, watch out. It's going to get a lot harder for San Francisco to move the football. I respect guys like Jonathan Taylor. I respect guys like Saquon Barkley. But to me, there's some value down the board here. I have a bet in on Kyren Williams at 12-1. I think he's a great look in this spot. Went averaged over 100 yards per game once he became the bell cow back for the Rams. We all know McVay wants to run the football. He is going to consistently get the carries to do it. And there's no one to take away those carries in the backfield either. So Kyren Williams, 12-1, really interesting to me. If Nick Chubb were healthy, 25-1 seems like a crazy price, but I just don't trust he's going to be healthy early enough to win this. And I think Bijan at 12-1 and then Jahmyr Gibbs at 20-1, also interesting looks. The problem with Gibbs is sharing the backfield with Montgomery. It's going to take away some of the carries.
Yeah, if you were looking at the, you know, the running back with rushing plus receiving where McCaffrey would be a giant favorite, all of a sudden Gibbs at the very least would be a little bit more attractive because of that. 20-1 right now. I'm kind of, even with that though, the fact that, you know, we have our Green Bay Packer co-owner here on the show, Wyatt Thompson, but I mean, Josh Jacobs 16-1, is he really going to be, I mean, come on, should he really be in the top eight of the odds?
I don't believe that Josh Jacobs is going to get the workload that we saw Aaron Jones get at the end of the year.
That at least surprised me, and that to Mike's point, why this market kind of all over the place so far in the leading rushing yards category for the NFL this year. Great NFL talk here with Mike Somich. We will wrangle him to stick around with us for one more second. We're going to talk some MLB daily bets on the card for Mike. Talk some general overarching themes now that we're up against the All-Star break here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month, and lucky for you, the VSIN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our all-new NFL betting guide. To access this invaluable guide, you need to be a VSIN Pro subscriber. For a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. You get a full year of VSIN Pro for just $199. It's normally $240, and as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That is 13 months of VSIN Pro for $199, and it gets you access to everything we offer, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all of the betting guides like our NFL guide. Just head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code SHARP, and you get that 13-month deal for $199 with instant access to our NFL betting guide. Also, the college football guide, our release show, coming up. Mark your calendars, July 31st. That's hot off the press, is Mike Somich, so get ready.
I love it.
I know you're hard at work.
I can't wait for this college football season and the release show. This is one of those where every single time I look at the college football standings now, like, my mind melts I'm just not used to these teams being in these conferences and the games that you're going to see. And there's not too many terrible travel spots yet. But in the years down the road, you're going to see some brutal back-to-back games for West Coast teams on the East Coast. It's just naturally going to happen. It's just a new aspect of handicapping college football.
Seriously. I believe Delaware State, Hawaii, your first official game of the season.
Oh, what a travel that is. Yeah. Quick question.
Just a quick question. Bus ride, right?
Just a quick bus ride for the Hornets. I believe, is that the Hornets? Yes, I think it is. Delaware State.
College football guy? Football? The video game?
NCAA football. I used to like build my own team, and you play all the D2 schools that first year, so you have a huge recruiting year, and then you get all of these great players in that have actual names.
Oh, wow. You cheat the system here.
You could cheat the system, and my buddy and I used to play. He would play quarterback. I'd play wide receiver. He'd play defensive end rusher. I'd play safety. We're just picking passes off. Oh, it's beautiful.
Are you breaking the nostalgia and getting this year's, or...
I don't think my wife would play to be the computer, so I think that might not fly for me.
Got to start training the child, you know. Just be, you know, that's always an option. But
we got her on Mario Kart right now.
Okay,
so we're starting small. We're moving into it.
As I always like to say, if you can conquer Rainbow Road, you know, you can conquer.
There's like eight of them now. It is wild. Like, growing up with, like, Mario 64 and, like, maybe you played one or two on SNES. Like, okay, great. There's these specific sets. Now you buy these things and you get, like, It's like 16 different sets of four tracks. Wait, really? All that have been on previous ones. There's like 10 Rainbow Roads. Like I talk smack to my little nephew. He's like, let's play Rainbow Road. I'm like, no. This isn't Rainbow Road. Like, we're playing my Rainbow Road.
Yeah. Joe Cirillo, noted sports, only sports video game guy. I don't know if Joe, if you're a Mario Kart guy as well, but I feel like you have to be.
I did used to play Mario Kart on my Nintendo DS. I've also learned recently because when I moved a couple months ago, my girlfriend dug up her old Wii and we were playing Mario Kart, and she criticizes me for saying Mario. I've recently learned that New York is the only place in the country where you say Mario. Like, we have Mario's Pizzeria, a well-known pizza chain back in New York. Everywhere else, it's Mario, and it's like nails on a chalkboard whenever I hear Mario. It drives me nuts because it is Mario. It will always be Mario. And yeah, Mike, to your point, Rainbow Road, I might have thrown a Wii controller a month ago because of Rainbow Road.
Mario Kart
that,
Wii.
That went south, and I was like, let's just go back to Wii Tennis so I can kick her ass in that.
Yeah, there you go. Mario Kart Wii, underrated you know, console game, at least for the Mario Kart with the wheel.
I was trying to make a left turn, and I'm like, I got my whole body contorting.
That's great. That's what happens. That is life there with all the old school Wii games. We're here with Mike Somich, your co-host of The Handle, talking some Major League Baseball right now in our last few minutes together. Joe and I are doing our top 10 power ratings just going into All-Star Week. And I think a big question for a lot of people is, how far do you drop both the Dodgers and the Yankees with how rough of the last couple of weeks it has been? And you get the Dodgers here, who go fresh off a sweep of the hands of Philadelphia. Seems like the sky is falling. Worst starting pitcher, ERA, WHIP, batting average against, and walks per nine of anybody over the last few weeks. Now you get Tarik Skubal on the road. So is this a buy low spot for you on the Dodgers, or what do you do against the AL Cy Young favorite?
Yeah, this is a buy low spot for me. Look, I tried to run my numbers like four separate ways to come up with the Dodgers sitting at plus 125, which is what they are right now in the market against this Tigers team. And every which way I did it, it was plus 110, plus 115. I just the advantage from the Dodgers side, from an offensive perspective, to me, offsets a large part of the advantage with Skubal on the mound versus Paxton, who's more than capable of a pitcher against this specific Tigers lineup as well. So whenever you go through this and you see minus 148, like, I get it. The Dodgers have not been playing good baseball. Skubal's your AL Cy Young favorite. Sometimes the bet you don't want to make is the right bet. And this is one of those situations where if everything I have is pushes this out, it might be at plus 110. 14, 15 cents of advantage is more than enough for me to take a shot. So I'll take the Dodgers plus 124 tonight.
Mike, your logic makes perfect sense. I wanted to do the same thing at that value, but Ben knows after a couple Sundays ago, we were on air. I took Paxton and the Dodgers in a pick'em in San Francisco and quickly found myself down 7-0 in the third inning. So I can't do it with Paxton, but I think Skubal's a little overhyped. So I like, you know, your logic there. I'd like to say I'm riding with you. I'm not, but I'm rooting for you because I don't think Skubal should be the Cy Young leader. Let's stay, though, in the American League. Orioles, Yankees, Gerrit Cole. I've enjoyed every second of watching him struggle since he came back from injury so far. I've got a near 2-1 ticket from, you know, March on the Orioles to win the AL East when everyone was anointing the Yanks champs of that division, forgetting seemingly that the Orioles finished 18 games ahead of them a year ago. How do you cap this one?
Yeah, this starts with Gerrit Cole in a lot of ways. When I went on this morning and looked at the total, it was sitting at 8.5 for this game, and I kind of scratched my head because you've got Cade Povich on the hill for the Orioles, not exactly a lights-out pitcher here. Both offenses very adept and very able to hit the baseball. And so really this total is sitting on Gerrit Cole and what you expect from him. I don't expect too much right now. I don't know how you can. I mean, we've seen him multiple times on the mound now. He had low velocity in one game. He was getting shelled in another one. I don't trust Gerrit Cole to be that guy who can go out and throw 6-7 innings of one-run baseball against an elite offense in Baltimore, especially when this is positive hitting conditions with the current temperature there and the weather. So for me, this is one of those rather easy ones where I popped in the over 8.5. I took a little bit of over 9. Now we're sitting at 9. I would still play the over in this spot. I thought this should be closer to 9.5 with both of these positive valued offenses against pitchers that I think are very ripe for the picking right now.
Yeah, and if you shop around, you can still find a couple books have a juiced 8.5 out there minus 120, but you could also get even money on a 9 over at this point, depending on the book there. Huge series in the AL East as the Yankees have slipped now behind the Orioles. Baltimore favored to get the one seed, favored to win the AL East. A big, big series, to say the least, there at Camden Yards. As we're talking some Major League Baseball here, just from like the general perspective, before we get to your last play, Mike, you know, Dodgers, Yankees, it's easy to obviously rip when they are, you know, sort of the you know, the big bad boys of Major League Baseball, and it's very nice and comforting to watch a team like that with all the payroll behind them struggle. Where do you sit on them, just from like a very long-term perspective here, as far as actually wanting to buy as we get toward the second half of the year?
If I was going to buy either of them, it's the Dodgers. The Yankees, to me, I still don't trust Aaron Judge is going to stay healthy for the full year. Yeah. I still have issues with this Yankees lineup when he goes down. We saw them absolutely fall apart without him in it last year. On the Dodgers side, the lineup is still stacked. They've got players that they can come in. I expect both these teams to try to make a move. I think the Dodgers are more likely to be able to pull that off with what they've had to be have to be able to give up closer to the deadline. And then I look around the structure, right? Well, the Dodgers have to get out of the NL, and the Phillies are playing good baseball, but the Braves are not what we thought they were going to be at the start of the season because the injury bug has hit them. And you look at this Yankees team, I want no part of the Orioles. I mean, this is a very, very good baseball team that has a plethora of assets to go improve their bullpen, to go improve their rotation at the trade deadline. The Orioles, to me, should be the favorite in this division, should be the favorite right now in the AL, and I don't want to buy the Yankees on a dip when I don't see the moves that, like, everything went perfectly for them, and this is the position they're in. Yeah, they had a bad stretch here for about 3 weeks or so, but everything prior to that was just roses. Everything came out smelling perfectly. And so if I'm going to fade either team, or if I'm going to take a piece of either team, to me right now it's the Dodgers because of the way that the whole thing sets up for them in the second half.
I think you, me, Joe, we're all on the same page. We are really buying Baltimore, especially for this home stretch run.
Yeah, we're all buying Baltimore, and I agree with the assessment of buying into the Dodgers more so than the Yankees. I mean, look at what LA has done. Yes, it's been ugly. Ben, you cite all those atrocious starting pitching stats, but they haven't had Kershaw yet. Mind you, they're down Ohtani. He's not coming back this year, so that's irrelevant. But Yamamoto is coming back. Walker Buehler, I think, could be a good addition to the bullpen if he comes back later on in the year. I think him as a starter, just forget about it for the season. He's been horrendous, but I think he could really help their pen come the postseason. Yankees pitching, I don't see it getting better. Carlos Rodon, something broke when Boone left him in too long against the Red Sox a few weeks ago. Nestor Cortez has come back down to earth. I don't trust Stroman long term. I think the Dodgers certainly have more to look forward to than the Yanks. Mike, you got one more play for us out not too far from me down in Anaheim. Angels, Mariners, Tyler Anderson going to the All-Star game for the Angels against Brian Wu, who, smaller sample size, but sub 2 ERA, part of that incredible Mariners rotation. What do you like there?
I like the Mariners in this spot. They're sitting at -135 for the game, but I want to focus on this starting pitching matchup. You mentioned Anderson going to be an all-star this year. Right now at 2.81 ERA, 1.18 whip. But if you look at everything else, you look at his past stats, I mean, this is the second lowest ERA he's ever had in his career. He's consistently been a pitcher who's around that high threes, low fours type of ERA. I don't think that this is the Tyler Anderson we're going to see for the full season. I do believe in Wu for the Mariners here. If you focus on just the first five, and I talk about this all the time, I love first five betting because I'm handicapping starting pitchers. I want to know the knowns of the bet. And to me, that's playing the first fives here. I like the Mariners. I'll lay the half run first five, get +100 on the Mariners first five minus the half run.
I think Tyler Anderson's still the biggest regression candidate out there in Major League Baseball. 505 xFIP, 447 xERA with a 281. At this point in the year, you don't see that all that often. He is Mike Samofalo at the Samobom18 as he joins us here. Follow him on the at the handle as well all weekend long. Great to have you back in Vegas, sir. Good to see you.
Oh, excited to be back.
We'll continue to talk some fun Italian foods with Joe Serrallo when we return here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Right now, if you go on to our new look website, VSIN.com, which is optimized for mobile, fresh new view across all devices, you can find Mike Samich's best bets for the rest of the Saratoga slate. Great having Mike with us in studio, at the desk, at Bar Canada, in the flesh for the last couple of segments. You'll see Mike on the handle, noon to 3 Eastern time tomorrow and Sunday with Matt Brown. In addition to all that, we've got a whole lot of other info at VSIN.com with best bets, betting splits, all that good stuff. I'll go on right now at VSIN.com. All right, we are going to get to Joe Serrallo, the top five Italian foods. This is a segment I've been looking forward to all day as we get ready to wrap up the show. Some news that has come across the wire within the last half hour while we have been on here, Joe, and that is Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks. Some news to report. We go to Joe's hometown of New York City, and it is Jalen Brunson, 4-year, $156.5 million contract extension which is somewhat of a somewhat of a bargain, considering there was a lot more on the table potentially going into next year that he would be eligible to. He's a $113 million more. If he sat out, could potentially sign that on the max deal next year. But they get the deal done that starts in 2025-26. So it costs the player money, but this has to be a big win for the Knicks here to at least get in the current era, right, Joe, of player negotiations, to get a somewhat team-friendly deal for a guy of Brunson's ilk, as he is a re-signed there in Nick uniform.
Ben, can you notice the smile on my face, man? I am ecstatic.
Yeah, I can tell.
It. First off, Jalen Brunson's kind of proving, a point that I always make. It's like, well, once you get to the point where a guy's making $150 million, how greedy can some of these guys be, right? Like, at that point, what's the question? Do I need one yacht or do I need two yachts? I mean, give me a break. Yes, he's leaving a lot of money on the table, but he's also recognizing that he already has made and is continuing to make a ridiculous sum of money throughout his NBA career. So instead of prioritizing income, he's prioritizing winning. And I respect nothing more about a person and about an athlete than doing that. This makes me thrilled as a Knicks fan. And as someone, by the way, who 2 years ago, I was hosting a national radio show the day Brunson was signed by the Knicks, and I trashed that signing. I thought it was terrible. I thought he was a really good number two, but that the Knicks bringing him in to be a number one was ridiculous. It wouldn't pan out. I might have used the term bargain shopping. Thank you to Jalen Brunson for making me eat my words, because, take the entertainer in me and the professionalism, off the table. I love this guy. I have completely fallen in love with him just as the Knicks fan that I am. He's absolutely incredible. I mean, he goes out there, if he's having an off night shooting, he'll dish out 12 dimes. He'll grab boards. What separates him from other star players, and he continues to be disrespected, right? Not on the Olympic team. That's bogus. That's ridiculous. Last year, tough to give him the MVP. I thought he could have gotten a little more love, but it was really between Jokic and Doncic, in my opinion. But he was right there behind him. But he'll do the dirty work that other star players won't do. They just want to put up 40 points in the box score. And Brunson will do that plenty, but if he's not doing that on any given night, then he'll put up double-digit assists, double-digit rebounds. I just love this guy, and I love that and commend the fact that he's leaving money on the table to prioritize team chemistry, keep this squad together, and run it back. I do think the Knicks are the best matchup for the Celtics in the Eastern Conference, maybe in the league, in terms of the size of the team, in terms of the way that they play defense, their length on the wings. I think that we're going to get some great 1980-style Knicks-Celtics games this coming season.
And to put it in perspective on the cap savings here, Knicks saving over $37 million over the next 3 years on their cap by signing Brunson now. If he had waited till next year, I mean, you're looking at a deal that would have been almost $270 million. So big win there for the New York Knicks as we get that big news of the day there in the NBA.
Josh Hart also commenting on the $113 million pay cut. It says, build him a statue.
Build him a statue. There you
Hell
go.
Hell yeah.
There you go.
Start construction right now. 113 is a ridiculous sum of money to leave on the table. And, I talk about these guys, and at what point is it, enough, right? At what point can you prioritize winning and leave some money on the table? That's a lot to leave on the table. I really commend him for that, man. I love this guy.
Speaking of NBA, Summer League underway in Las Vegas. Why? You'll be there this weekend. Shout out to Zach Cohn, who was on with us a couple days ago, gave out the Magic. What was it? 17-18-1 to win Summer League? You really like their roster? Putting a pacing on the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Summer League opener of 96-69. So shout out, Zach. For now, good call.
They got some revenge for the playoffs.
Yeah, revenge game for Orlando, to say the least.
Summer League. I'd rather pop a sleeping pill than watch the Summer League.
It's, trust me, someone who, why not go over a year, oftentimes for networking purposes, a very great, fruitful way for us in the business. If you actually ever sit and watch the basketball, it's a tough watch. It's not easy. Anyway, alas, this is a segment we have been looking forward to, not to talk about Jalen Brunson, but to get into our guy Joe Cirallo. He has his Italian heritage, just like our producer Wyatt Tomchek, although Joe does give a little bit more Italian energy than you, Wyatt. I'm just being the...
I have the quarter of the Italian energy.
Right. That's all it takes, really. But, Joe, we're going through your top five Italian dishes here. I'm excited to see what you conjured up as your entire stake and reputation amidst your brethren is on the line as we wrap up this segment.
Man, this is such a hard list to make. I mean, this is way tougher than doing a top five quarterback list. But I want to start with an appetizer on this one. And I went with caponata because First off, I'm largely Sicilian, not entirely Sicilian, but this is a Sicilian specialty, if you will. And I also included it because I want to shout out our guy, Derek Stevens, the CEO at Circa, also owns the D, and the incredible restaurant at the D, Andiamo, which is where Derek sent me in my my first trip down to Fremont back in April. He made sure to get me a reservation there. And the highlight of that meal was the caponata that they put out with Italian bread to start. I mean, that was, I would have paid $40 for that bowl of caponata. And the fact that they put it out there complimentary with the bread, that was the best thing I ate that whole week I was in Fremont.
Joe, that was a birthday dinner for me last, that was what, a week two of the NFL season, Wyatt? We got a big crew after the Live Bet Sunday show, went over to Andiamo. Yeah, that place is awesome. One of the hidden gems of Vegas. Glad you were able to check it out. Glad that made the list too, because I can concur. That was some great stuff.
One of the few restaurants, one of the few steakhouses that's actually worth its price point, in my
Seriously,
opinion.
Seriously, no doubt.
That place is incredible, and that caponata really just starts it off, just puts you in a great mood from the get. Number four, Veal Ossobuco. Ben, I don't know if you know, you've had this being from the Midwest. I've surprisingly met a lot of people who have never tried this. It's a veal shank that's just cooked usually in some sort of red wine sauce, slow cooked for a long time. And that thing just melts in your mouth. You can serve it with a grain. You know, Italians tend to love polenta. I'm not the biggest fan of polenta, but it usually comes with some sort of, you know, grain or carb and then some veggies as well. But this meat, when it's done well, I restrained from eating veal for a long time because it's not the most humane meat, the way that it's prepared and, you know, the way that those baby cows, those calves are kind of put in a cage and not really able to grow most of their lives. It's kind of awful, but when you take a bite, I think you forget about all humanity because that's the most delicious thing you could have. Number three, we touched on this. It was my Italian flair on 4th of July. It's also the first thing I cooked for my girlfriend, and hey, she's still around, so it obviously worked. A pesto sauce, traditionally, obviously, over pasta. It's versatile. You can throw it over chicken. The key to this is it should not be creamy. People that put heavy cream, restaurants that put heavy cream in their pesto, don't know what they're doing. It's so simple. Olive oil, basil, garlic, a lot of pecorino romano, and pinoli nuts. And don't skip out on the nuts. Don't substitute them. I know pinoli nuts are a little pricey, but they really make a difference. It's just such an easy, simple, yet incredible thing to make. By far, my favorite type of pasta. Was tough leaving carbonara off this list, but pesto had to take precedent. Number two. Ben, I'm going to ask you, polpette, do you know what that is?
I mean, I love it mostly because of the name. I actually have had polpette. I have not had veal ossobuco, but now that you have described it, I mean, in Wisconsin, veal is actually is a very commonly eaten meat, but not in the ossobuco style. So I do want to get to that. I have had polpette, though, yes.
Okay, so polpette, a lot of people see this, they don't know what it means. Meatballs, guys. And it's not spaghetti and meatballs because that's not Italian. Spaghetti and meatballs, if you don't go to Italy and see that on a menu. And if you do, you're in the same kind of tourist trap that'll have chicken parm on the menu because that's not Italian either. That's American. It's Medigan, as we say. Polpette, big, juicy meatballs. I start them in the pan, brown them, and then finish them off in the sauce for about 4 hours, stirring it every 15 minutes. Load them up with ingredients. First off, you want to mix the meats. You want some pork, beef, and veal in there. Load up cheese, breadcrumb, garlic, parsley, and then slow cook those bad boys till they fall apart in your mouth. The key to eating them, because you need to drown them in sauce, you want excess sauce, you eat them with Italian bread, not with spaghetti. And then number one, pizza. Have to have pizza on the list, but maybe not your conventional type of pizza. Napolitan pizza, that's my favorite style over Roman pizza, which is very much like New York pizza. Napolitan pizza, a little thicker, a little doughier, fresh ingredients, salami, funghi, which is, you know, mushrooms. And you eat it with a fork and knife. And I learned this when I studied in Italy. You don't drink wine with pizza. Ben, pizza is commonly eaten at lunchtime. Instead, you drink an ice cold beer with it. No wine at lunchtime. That's for later on in the evening.
We've learned a lot today. Wyatt, I know. Wyatt, I can see he's taking notes over there, trying to live up to his 25. Well, and also we are starving. That's.
I haven't eaten today, so I can't wait. This segment didn't help my stomach.
It's probably a good thing that Andiamo does not open until 5 p.m., Wyatt, because it would be really hard to pass that up on the way out of here if we knew it was open and open for business for us right about now. That's all I can say. Great
can
job, Joe. Well done.
Can you sit at the bar, just get a martini and have some caponata, not actually order anything? Because I might do that.
You should. That is probably a thing. I'll have to double check on that. When we come back, final hour of the final segment of this show here is we'll break down the biggest games on the MLB card after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We're back for the final time on Sharp Money from downtown Las Vegas. Big thanks to our producer, Wyatt Tomchick, our technical directors, Andrew Ringgold, Matt Hicks, got the A-team today. Chris Foster on audio as well. Joe Serallo, who just unveiled his top five Italian dishes. How are the social media pages? They lighten up, Joe? You getting any flack, any feedback on that so far?
I might be out of a job, according to our PD, Johnny Goulet, just gave me a hard time for leaving Cacio e Pepe off the list. So I don't know. That list might have cost me my job, or at least any hopes of becoming full-time.
Come on. Know your audience. Anyway, I thought it was a good list, and I'm not Italian at all, but I just like food, so I thought it was a very good job.
You will
try to redeem yourself here, because we do have some baseball to talk about in the final segment. You and I have done a number of shows together when Garrett Crochet has pitched, and you have had some sort of bet one way or another on Mr. Crochet every single time. Could this be his final start in a White Sox uniform? It is a shame that Paul Skeens was not pushed back to today, because that would have been an unbelievable matchup. Skeens for Pittsburgh against Crochet and the White Sox. I'm seeing him about $1.65 favorite in the market. This is about as heavily as you will see the White Sox priced to the favorite simply because of Crochet. What is the angle here today, Joe, if there is one, to attack Garrett Crochet against the Pirates at home?
First off, if it was Skeens and Crochet, I think that total might have come in at 5.5.
Seriously.
And I still would have played the under. I'm going back to the K prop. You know, it burned me against the Marlins in his last start out, but he's had almost a full week, 6 days between starts. And really, that was, you know, a K prop that he was on pace to at least be competitive with. And then he just blew up and had, what was it, like a 45 or a 48 pitch fourth inning. Pretty inexplicable there from Crochet. But he's going up against the Pirates team. And I know a lot of people are really looking into the metrics and they're going, well, Pittsburgh has, you know, despite the fact they have the fifth worst K rate in baseball, right? Guys are going to ignore that and say, but in 29 starts that lefties have had, their K numbers are below usual. Garrett Crochet is not your average lefty. So, you know, I don't care what a guy like Nestor Cortez does against the Pirates. You know, most lefties, a little lower velocity, more junk ball. Garrett Crochet is different. The guy has three pitches that are all 90 plus. His fastball is about 98. Slider's 91 with wicked movement. I don't care what average lefties do against this lineup. He is not average, and they don't really know Crochet. They haven't seen Crochet, a lot of these Pirates hitters. So they're at a massive disadvantage there. I'm laying the $1.45, and I'm going over 7.5 Ks. Like I said, they're a bottom five team in terms of strikeouts. Crochet is still a stud despite, you know, a baffling last start out. I'm not going to let his last start deter me after, you know, looking at his last eight starts as a whole. So I'm going to go over 7.5 Ks. I think we're getting a good favorable number here because of his last.
Yeah, I look at, I went first five under there, under four. You will never catch me dead betting an under full game with the White Sox, no matter how good their pitcher is, just because of the bullpen. It is a nightmare, and especially it's with a 7.5 too. We've seen it so many White Sox games. A 4-1 becomes a 4-4, and now you're SOL there on any sort of bets with an eight or under that. The other thing too, you know, Pittsburgh. They're 22nd in WRC plus against lefties, fifth highest K rate. So they still strike out a lot against lefties, to your point, Joe. And numbers are equally as bad for the White Sox against lefties as a whole. As much as I don't believe in Marco Gonzalez long term, he's definitely running hot right now. 2.65 ERA in his first three starts since being called up from AAA for Pittsburgh, with a 4.40 expected fielding independent pitching and a 5.25 xERA. But we talk all the time about how negative regression, just because it's obvious and it's there, it is not guaranteed to happen in your next start. And against a team that really struggles against lefties like the Chicago White Sox, it is certainly not a guarantee that that happens for Gonzalez. That's probably a good pitcher to target to fade post-All-Star break, assuming he remains in that rotation for Pittsburgh. But at least for right now, I will look at a first five under on that and try to squeeze as much value as we can out of Crochet if, in fact, he ultimately gets moved and leaves Chicago.
Yeah, I like that play, Ben. And, you know, you look at those money line prices, right? I can see that as the first five money line laying $1.55 because Crochet is on the bump. But for a full game, this White Sox team, you're nuts if you lay $1. I don't care if they win this game or not. In terms of smart bets, you're nuts if you lay $1.55 on the White Sox.
Crochet at circa, Joe, is now -198 first five. I mean, it's just hilarious.
That makes sense. I guess that makes sense because it's Crochet as a first five number. But for the full game, Pittsburgh's bullpen ain't that bad. I know more about this guy than most because he was a Met and I was baffled when they traded him for Vogelback. I love Colin Holderman. He's got a sub-2 ERA back end of that Pirates bullpen. But they've got some good relief pitchers in there in the back of the pen. It's for a full game, almost $1.60 on the White Sox. Don't make that bet, guys. I don't care if they win. Just don't make the bet.
Great name for a guy who's in a setup role. Colin Holderman for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And as an aside to that, Joe, a couple of really good rivalry series that get underway. Cubs at the Cardinals today. Kyle Hendricks against Sonny Gray. You also get the biggest of the series from a playoff positioning perspective going into the All-Star break. Yankees in Camden Yards taking on the Orioles as Gerrit Cole against Cade Povich, the lefty there for the O's. Anything you're looking at with either of those two big rivalry series here tonight?
Yeah, nothing in the Yankees-Orioles game, but I do have a play on that Cubs-Cardinals. And our guy Mike was just on talking about first five run lines. I'm going to go with the Cardinals first five. I got this run line. So the Cardinals, you know, have to cover by half a run. They got to be up after five. A tie will be a loss, not a push. Laid $1.30 on it. Sonny Gray, he's got a 1.9 home ERA this year. And he's going up against the Cubs team that he fares pretty well against. Surprisingly, really high strikeout numbers against this Cubs team. I think in 60 at-bats, he's got like 23 strikeouts against current Cubs hitters. But, you know, 5.5 Ks for Sonny Gray, I was considering, but yeah, delay like $1.80 at 6.5. That number got a little too high for me. So I went first five going up against Kyle Hendricks, who now this one might be tricky to some. Kyle Hendricks owns the Cardinals throughout his career. For whatever reason, he has incredible numbers against the St. Louis Cardinals. But Kyle Hendricks this season has been a batting practice pitcher. He has a 7.3 ERA. On the road, it's over 8.5. I know that the career long-term numbers say he does really well against St. Louis, but I've watched him pitch so many times this year. I have faded him so many times this year. I took the Brewers' first five run line against him the other day. I think I might have been on air with you, Ben, during that game. If it wasn't you, it was Jared. And it was you, because I had your Brewers. It was like Peralta versus Kyle Hendricks. And I had the Brewers first five run line. So I'm going back to it with St. Louis at home. First five run line. I'm happy to lay $1.30 on that.
There we go. Cardinals as a near $2 favorite for the full game against the Chicago Cubs, who have just been miserable. Cardinals will enter this weekend here, several games back of the Milwaukee Brewers. Brewers who lost 2 of 3 to the Pirates midweek, although the Cardinals just swept in a doubleheader by the Kansas City Royals. Cards 5 back of the Brew Crew there, final weekend before the All-Star break. Anything else, Joe, that makes your card for today?
Yeah, I got one more play. It's a same game parlay. Now, you can play this by itself as a K prop because one of the two legs is Ranger Suarez over 5.5 strikeouts. Now, I have to advise you watching this, if you're interested in that play, shop around, because I saw it laying $1.65 and I would not make that bet. I also saw it laying $1.35 and I certainly would make that bet. 30-cent disparity, pretty uncommon, pretty big for a K prop nowadays. You'll find bigger disparity in other maybe newer markets, but that's a lot for a K prop. So if you want to take over 5.5 at $1.35 going up against an Oakland A's team that is 29th in Ks per game, in their last three, they're striking out over 12 times per game. On the road this year, a league worst 10.5 Ks per game for these Oakland A's. So Suarez over 5.5. If you want to play it straight, lay $1.35, or you can do what I did. I took a double, six or more strikeouts. So the same as over 5.5. Paired with the Phillies money line to get my same game parlay that I took at +120. So six or more strikeouts for Suarez, Phillies money line at home against Oakland, got plus money on that, +120. I would take that even at even odds. Anything with a plus sign on that same game parlay I'm taking. So that's my third and final play of the day.
There we go. All right, so we'll recap that for Joe here in just a second. Again, I just have the one pre-flop for today, getting involved with Pittsburgh as they take on the Chicago White Sox. First five, under four. Miguel Gonzalez against Garrett Crochet there. Laid $1.20, but that to me, very fair price. Would expect, again, with how good Crochet has been, how bad both teams have been against lefties, you know, that would not surprise me if that got all the way down to 3.5 before things get started. You can, one more time, Joe, roll through your three as we go off the air here.
Yeah, let's do it. Garrett Crochet in that game you just mentioned, Ben, over 7.5 Ks, laid $1.45. Cardinals first five run line, Sonny Gray versus Kyle Hendricks, laid $1.30 for that. And then the same game parlay, Ranger Suarez over 5.5 strikeouts, Phillies money line +120.
There we go. Little bonus play too. I Jose Ramirez, man, 13-1 for the Home Run Derby Monday. Just give me to the semis. There's no bracketing in the first round anymore. Just give me an opportunity to play that the head-to-head market live. I know you had a couple that were jumping off the page to you as well here.
Yeah, Adolis Garcia, nothing. I'm putting a full unit on when it comes to the home run derby.
Little sprinkle.
But Adolis Garcia at 5-1, you know, in front of his home crowd. The guy's a tank, right? Puts on shows and batting practice routinely. So I like him there. And then maybe, you know, honestly, not maybe, because I'm biased, I'll put a little something on Pete, probably both a quarter of a unit, to be honest.
While you're eating your Italian cuisine on Monday night from Globe Life Field in Arlington, that's at least what we expect. He is Joe Cirallo. For Joe, for Wyatt Tomczyk, our producer, I'm Ben Wilson. Have a great weekend here from all of us at Sharp Money. Up next, VSiN Primetime, Tim Murray, Jonathan Von Tobel. Take the baton from here.